Well, gosh, you know why I remember it? Because at like 5 o'clock or whatever time it was, suddenly the wind blew from one end of the from one freeway across our little valley to the other. And do you know that for 2 days after that, I couldn't
Me
take
either.
A full breath? And you had a gas mask.
I got a little bit of a break because of the gas mask, but my lungs hurt a little bit, too.
Yeah, it was a carbon monoxide poison.
It was very, very bad.
People don't know now who haven't been around
what
smog was. I mean, I came out here in 76 looking for work from New York, and I had some great meetings with Roger Corman, you name it. He even offered me an editing thing, but the sky was yellow
all the time.
It was yellow. And I went back to New York, and it was December, and it was this, you know, bluebird day.
Yep.
And honest to God, I had an epiphany. I said, nope. And I stayed in New York another 20 years. When I did come out, it wasn't yellow anymore. They did change that.
Yes,
they did.
That's the thing
it.
We got to remember. There's plenty of bad news with the environment and other things, but the good news we got to celebrate as well, which is 4 times the cars since 1970, millions more people, but a fraction of the smog.
Yep. Right.
The only people that are still getting hit are near the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles, the people near the fulfillment centers, you know, sending the Amazon stuff to us, and the other freeway interchanges, stuff like that. Those people have unhealthy air that we're going to clean up. We're going to get to that too, but we've cleaned it up for 90% of the population or more. We've done a good job, and we've got to replicate it with other things that we know will work. We believed that cleaner power plants and cleaner cars would do a lot, and of course they did. That's the main two things that got us to where we are today, which is a lot cleaner here.
Yes.
And, you know, it's interesting because the battle still continues. In Utah, Salt Lake City, because it's rung by mountains, has a terrible inversion issue. They make people sick.
Right.
And the legislator there, which is very conservative, is fighting the environmentalists. And it's like you just need it's a little insane. It's like you just need to adopt basic emission controls. Like, look what happened in Los Angeles. It's proven, and yet there's still tremendous libertarian resistance, as if it's some sort of an attack on their freedoms to kill themselves.
And their families. Business people like to breathe clean air, too, as it turns out. They want their kids to breathe clean air. Imagine that.
Wonderful. Can I give them a health tip?
Yeah. Sure.
Hey, you kids out there, I know you're dying because of the smog, and if you want to live and listen to the Big K here, what I'd recommend you do is drink Switchel every day. Switchel is spring water with honey and vinegar. Make it to taste so it isn't too sour, and it'll purify your blood and keep you from getting cancer. That's good.
Anna Lee had an interesting thought yesterday about wearing a smog mask so as to frighten people into looking around and noticing that there's a lot of smog. But that probably wouldn't work any more than
hot.
In Tokyo.
Oh, so hot, man. Hata inside
of
you, gas
mask. It's so
stupid
to live in this environment. It's so stupid, man. I look out of my window, there's nothing but a big black, a thick pall of smoke. I didn't give up my car again this week, though.
I'll read my poem. It's the right time.
Okay.
In honor of the smog. In honor of the smog, I make beer. I smoke lots of jugged ban grass. I pickle various vegetables. I pickle the easy pickling cauliflower. I pickle the unpeelable Oaxaca that my friend at the RR Market said I could peel, along with the palumbra he gave me. In honor of the smog, I watch the wind chimes and the toyon tree, which I believe has been partially killed by the smog. In honor of the smog, I paint a bright yellow eight-pointed sun on top of the day on which this poem is being read.
Why?
And you've been, now how did you become, I mean, you really are known.
Not only a spokesperson, but you've lived a good life show me the way. You know, you have led the movements.
The electric car revolution.
Yeah, you had an electric car when it was electric golf cart.
Exactly.
Right?
And I credit my dad with a lot of that. The bad influence was the smog in L.A. got me involved with the first Earth Day in 1970, but the good influence was my father. He was a conservative that liked to conserve.
Uh-huh.
Good luck finding that today.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, I mean, we turn off the lights, we turn off the water, we save string, we save tinfoil. He was a son of Irish immigrants. He'd lived through the Great Depression.
Right.
So when I would complain about the smog, he'd listen to me once or twice, and he finally say, I don't like the smog either, but what are you doing about it? You know, go try to get some clean law passed, clean air law or something, or build a cleaner car or something, work for some engineers or do something. But don't. It's not what you say no to, Eddie. It's what you say yes to that I'm more interested in.
So when did this happen?
Wonderful.
When did
this happened, you know, back in 1968 or 69.
Mm-hmm.
He died in 1970, and the first Earth Day was it was within a few days of my father's passing.
Oh, my.
So I got involved with all that stuff to honor him as much as anything. And keep in mind, 1970, I'm a broken, struggling actor. I hadn't even done our Mountain Dew commercial yet. You know,
right.
So I didn't have a lot of...
No shade elsewhere.
That's right. Long in the distance. But I wanted to do something that I knew would protect the environment, honor my dad. And so I started recycling. I started composting, became a vegetarian. I started riding my bike when weather and fitness permitted. I started taking public transportation even more. And I even bought a 1970 electric car.
Wow.
Imagine that.
And when I say car, I'm being quite grand. We're talking about a golf cart with a windshield wiper and a horn, okay?
Yeah.
It had a electric cart.
Well, that explains so much as to that. I always wondered, what was your motivation? And it's your dad. That's fantastic.
Very much so. And everything that I did was very inexpensive. The electric car was $900, which was a perfectly reasonable price for a used car at that point. But it got me around L.A. on a very smoggy day or a rainy day, you know, and I didn't want to take, be standing out there in the rain or take my bike. So it even... took me on a date with Cindy Williams. Remember Cindy Williams?
Yeah. Sure.
My dear friend from Laverne and Shirley.
Sure.
She played Shirley.
Yeah.
So I took her on a date. I did not get a second date is all I'm going to say. The car was so slow, I didn't charge it fully or something. It was crawling. There was a kid on big wheel passing us by.
Oh, geez.
A butterfly was going faster
than we were. But you've been a good sport about this because you've been parodied as the face of clean energy in that respect and that kind of lifestyle on The Simpsons.
I love The Simpsons. That was a high point in my life.
What was the setup on that one?
Everybody was getting on the bus, you know, public transportation. You'd think I'd be in favor of it. Getting on the bus to save the trees there in Springfield. To save the old growth trees, and I wasn't getting on. Why? They came up and asked me. I have a little tiny vehicle. They said, I'm driving a car powered by my own sense of self-satisfaction. I had this little golf cart with a helmet on and wires going down to the motor and the wheels. It was very funny.
Yeah, but didn't it stall on the tracks, but then the train
That was
came?
The second one. That's right. The Ed Begley solar car, I'm going, the eclipse of the sun stops me right on the railroad tracks. And finally, then the train stops. It's a solar train, as it turns out. So it stopped a few inches away from my electric solar car. They're great.
But you took public transportation, but that almost got you killed.
Yeah, big on public transportation.
Folks, by the way, these are all wonderful stories. Well, wonderful, sometimes terrifying, but very interesting stories.
You're listening to
Phil
and Ted's Sexy Boomer Show. Our special guest today is Ed Begley Jr.
And we're talking about his wonderful book.
That just came out last year, now it's already last year, 23.
That's right.
And I read it cover to cover, and it is...
I love you, Ted.
It's absolutely delightful. But some of the stories... So now we're getting back to the dark side, the addictive quality. Of gambling,
yes.
And you talked some friend into taking a bus out to Gardenia where there was some casino, and you figure you had it
as
all.
As you are today,
Now, were you drinking then, or was this a new addiction?
I was drinking, but I wasn't drunk on that particular day
somehow.
What
happened?
What happened was my friend Paul Appleby and I, he was my roommate at that point, I said, let's go down to Gardenia. It's a different city than L.A., you know, and so they have special laws there in the city of Gardenia. They allow draw poker.
Uh-huh.
So let's go down there, and because I know you like poker, too. Let's go play in a real game with real card players. He said, great, I'll drive. I said, no, come on. You know me. I like to take my bike, the bus. I'm not going to bike down there, but we'll take the bus. It's real easy. One bus will take us right to Western and Santa Monica, and the next bus will take us down Western Avenue right to where the Horseshoe Casino is. Let's do it. He said, okay. We got on the RTD, and we got to Santa Monica and Western. There's a bus stop right near our house. We waited 2 minutes, got on the bus, and see, I told you this is great.
Yeah.
Get off Santa Monica and Western, wait 5 minutes, the bus comes, I said, see, this is better than driving. You don't have to worry about the traffic.
Right.
We get to Western, not at the casino, we get to Western and Imperial. The driver says, inexplicably, he says, okay, end of the line. No, we're going down further down. I was told there's a bus. Yeah, but that's another bus system, he said. It's Gardena here, another city, another bus system. You got to get into the Gardena bus line.
Sitting in the draft, one went crazy and the rest all laughed. Eight dumb bozos riding in a van, they can't get
get there, then no one can.
Everyone's a bozo on this bus. Zips and Bean are sitting next to us. Are you a hostage? Are you a spy?
Just some bazooka who's prepared to die. We left eight stupid bozos sitting in a tub. One got poached and had to leave the club. Seven mellow bozos with their brains all fried. One threw in the towel and the rest all cried. Six frightened bozos tied up in a spot. One dove out the window, but the rest got caught.
Everyone's a bozo on this bus. Zips and Bean are sitting next to us. Are you a hostage? Are you a spy?
Or just some bazooka who's prepared to die? Five red-nosed bozos burning in the sand. Things got so hot that one joined the band. That left four and there ain't no more. The driver got in and closed the door. Four angry bozos, no place to hide. The bus pulls out and we're on the ride. Never any doubt that the four would make it. They kicked out the driver and they said, let's take it. They can afford to be bozos on a bus. They ain't afraid to use the word us. One thing sure for the final four, they know this bus won't go to war.
Well, everyone's a bozo on this bus. Zips and Bean are sitting next to us. Are you a hostage? Are you a spy?
Just some berserker who's prepared to die. This bus
won't go.
This bus
won't go.
This bus
won't go to war.
This bus. Show, huh?
Oh, for boy, sure.
Yeah, were y'all convinced?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. I'm going to have to see it again before I decide.
Yeah. Well, no, okay, so we get out. It's broad daylight at 3:20 in the afternoon. Lots of cars driving by. A busy Shell station there. There's no problem. And these, like, 10 kids start walking towards us with purpose, like a gang of kids.
Ow.
And I'm wondering, I don't want to run away. I don't want them to think I'm uptight. And then suddenly we just knocked down and stabbed and beaten and wound up at, what was it called, Sentinella Valley Hospital. I had a collapsed lung, as it turns out.
Oh.
But I lived through it, and it just showed me another time the kind of situation my addiction put me into. I wanted to go gamble, and look what happened.
Boy,
you also had some
bad bet is right.
You had some very hairy automobile accidents when you were drunk.
Yeah,
right. And astonishingly, you somehow
bounced back.
And the only time you ended up in jail was for impersonating an officer.
Right.
I remember when you were doing stand up.
That's right.
Do you remember you also had the invisible dog?
Oh my God, you remember that.
I remember
Phil.
That very well, yeah.
I can die happy. Phil Proctor remembers my invisible dog routine. I swear to God, this
the
is
the Ace
big.
Trucking Company was playing at that
time.
Yeah,
Ace Trucking Company. That's George Memley, of course, and Fred Willard.
And Fred Willard.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
At the Troubadour.
Patty Deutsch.
Patty Deutsch. Oh God bless him. Well, what Fred and Patty are gone now. But the boy, oh boy, do their memories linger on.
Likewise,
what
for me.
Strong, beautiful, wonderful.
Yes, how did you get arrested impersonating a cop in front of the troubadour?
Tell
I decided
story.
In the book to tell the absolute truth, not the story I'd been telling for years, which I literally, like OJ, trying to find the real killers. I told it so often I believed it. So the true story is. Well, let me tell you the bogus story. I was just walking from the Troubadour to Tana's, and these sheriff's department
Dan
guys
Thomas,
came up and rousted me and took me in, even though I was just I told them I'm an actor and I'm wearing this for a role. We're going to be shooting soon. I was just on stage at the Troubadour. All of that is a lie. I was not performing at the Troubadour, as I told them. I was performing at a club I can't remember the name of, a little restaurant kind of a place on Reseda Boulevard near Nordoff. And I had my police uniform on. I went, maybe I'll go by the Tana's and have a bite, but first I'll go to the Troubadour and drink. The ladies at the bar will think this is funny, me in an LAPD uniform.
Right.
So I went to the bar to pick up women, basically. Let's be clear what I was trying to do.
Of course.
And then I said, well, let's go grab a bite. I found a nice lady to walk with me over to Tana's. And that's when the cops came up. I was not performing on stage. That was a lie I told them and everybody for years. I was just literally trying to get drunk and take somebody out on a date. But nonetheless, they did take me in for something that was a bum rap because I should be allowed to wear. I wasn't knocking on doors at Tana's or the Troubadour saying, give me all your money. I'm
That's
a cop.
Right.
And
yeah, right.
Give me your dope. I wasn't doing anything like that. I was just going to get a bite to eat. But I went to county jail because you don't want to do anything bad in 1973. Sorry. You don't want to do anything bad on a Friday night because you got to wait the whole weekend to get out.
Yeah, sure.
And there's no ATMs back in 1973, right. So you can't. How are you going to get $500 for the bail? I didn't know anybody that had $500 sitting around.
And you didn't have a little phone in your pocket to call for help either. Yeah.
I didn't have a house I could mortgage to get $500 from a bail bondsman. I had no way to get out.
Wow.
But I finally did get out on my own recognizance, and they even gave me my uniform back.
Wow.
God. I thought they were going to keep it. We're going to keep the uniform so he doesn't cause trouble again. The judge said, no, you're not. Give him back his uniform. It's a costume. Give it back to him.
Good. Good judge.
Yeah.
Hate cops, Guido. I always hate cops. Yeah, Nick. I hate cops, too.
Yeah, me, too.
I'll tell you guys what I'm going to do. I'll tell you what I'm going to get even with every rotten cop in the city.
Yeah, me too.
How are you going to do it, Nick? How are you going to do
it? You know what I'm going to do?
No. What you going to do, Nick?
I'm going to turn in my badge.
Yeah. I'm going to burn my uniform.
Very good.
Wow.
So you did stand-up. You started doing stand-up.
How did you stand up when you were so drunk?
I was actually that night, believe it or not, I had like two or three beers. I wasn't that drunk, but how I stood up at the clubs when I was really loaded, that's the question.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
That's what you're asking a good question. I didn't quite get it. That's a great joke. That's very funny.
When Procter & Bergman, when we were touring, people were always giving us drinks, you know, and other little comestibles. And we could never drink to do our show because it was so fast-paced, and there were two of us. We had to be there for one another.
Yeah.
But when you're doing stand-up, you know.
You can get away with a little lubricant.
You can get away with a little lubricant.
Yeah.
And you started with another unknown by the name of Michael Richards.
Yeah.
Back then, we were at Valley College together, and we did one night, a Monday night, a hoot night at the Troubadour, and some associates of Doug Weston saw us, and they tried to give us a contract. Huh. Doug Weston wanted to manage us because we had a very good night at the Troubadour and Hoot Night.
Wow.
And then we went to the Ice House and went on a few other times at different places. But Michael got drafted into the Army. You know, it was the Vietnam era.
Oh.
And so he went off to the Army, and I went, I like this stand-up, though, with him. He's so funny.
Yeah.
But maybe I'll try something on my own. And I did. I was at a club called Tulagi in Boulder, Colorado. And I started my stand-up career there, my solo career. And I finally got into the Ice House when I came back to L.A., then finally the Troubadour, then Max's Kansas City, then the Bottom Line, and then clubs and colleges and concerts around the country.
Max's Kansas City, I didn't know Max's did comedy.
They had mostly singers, but I was an opening act, so I did like 15, maybe 20 minutes of comedy. And what's so weird, I got booked on these little tiny stages, was I was a prop comic, so I had all these stupid props that I'd pull out, you know, and to have all that stuff on stage and to carry it around, I just wanted to make my life as complicated as possible, I think, was what was going on.
And Max's Kansas City, of course, was in New York City.
Now, right, the Ice House was the first place that Firesign Theater ever performed.
Is that true?
Yeah. And you know who our opening act was?
Who?
Steve Martin.
Oh, my God.
And he was doing his balloon animals.
I saw him do it. I saw him as an opening act for somebody. Maybe it was you guys.
Well, maybe it was us. And we got the good reviews, and they didn't get Steve Martin.
How great he was.
We went, good Lord.
He's a genius.
You know, and then during our touring years, Procter & Bergman, we'd run into Steve very often on the road. And we knew he was going to have a sudden breakthrough.
Yeah, me too.
And boy, did he ever.
I was doing the Exit Inn in Nashville. I did the Exit Inn. I opened for J.J. Cale, then a new guy playing the piano that nobody had heard of, Bette Midler's guy called Barry Manilow.
Little Barry Manilow. I opened
for him. And then Steve Martin came to see my set. He was so nice to come in and see my set and have a few kind words. But he had just been at a local college doing a much bigger room than I was doing with Exit Inn. and he had hundreds of people there, and this is the first time he did it. He took them all. He said, come with me. Let's go off campus. They walked across the street. He took them to McDonald's and ordered for all of them. I want 200 hamburgers. And
it's out of a Woody Allen movie. Bananas.
Separate checks, yeah, but he didn't pay for it all, I don't think. You know, but he said, everybody wants to get some fries or something, order what you want. And people are laughing. He had a lot of stuff to fill it in, you know, but he was hysterical. He took everybody across the street from the college campus to a McDonald's.
Yep.
Who thinks like that?
He was an absurdist. He is an absurdist like Bob Einstein,
Albert Brooks.
Albert Brooks.
Yeah.
You know, a surrealist. He did surrealism. Realistic
he
comedy.
Did, and did it very well.
Oh,
they both
man.
Did.
And he parlayed that into wonderful character work.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's so very talented.
So talented.
But again, all the people, how do you remember all of their names? I mean, are they, really, it's all in your head? When you were writing this book, did you write it chronologically?
Like, for example, you smoked a joint with Charles Manson?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a story, too.
Yeah. My friend James Jeremias and I, we had studied at Valley College. We had a cinematography class together.
You've been mentioned Valley College for people who don't know. What
L.A. Valley College. It's a community college. So it's called L.A. Valley City College or something now.
In the Valley.
In the Valley, in the San Fernando Valley. And James Jeremias went there. He went on to write a movie called Lost Boys, you might have seen in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful writer, wonderful guy. We had a cinematography class.
You were learning to be a camera operator.
I was, which I did for a while. I was an assistant cameraman.
You actually got into the union, didn't you?
I did. I got in the union learning skills, adopting skills I got at Valley College. But one day James said, because we lived in the West Valley, I was in Northridge, James was in Chatsworth, he said, come with me, I want to go see my friend David Kurland. And he lived up a little further up the hills and went to visit him. Dave Kurland was a wonderful artist, and he lived in a tree house next door to a saloon. Very odd. Okay. So we go and we smoke a joint with Dave, but he didn't have any dope with him. So he said, my friends up in the main house have some good pot. Let's go smoke a joint. So we smoked a joint with some people, some very amiable hippies that were there, and one guy played a little music and what have you, and it was fine. We smoked a joint with him and had some small talk. I don't know what we talked about, but we left. Went back down to Dave Kurland's place, the treehouse next to the saloon. I should have mentioned the saloon was not a real saloon, but a part of a movie set on the Spahn Ranch.
The Spahn Ranch.
Which you might have heard of.
Which became infamous.
Exactly, because that's where the Manson gang lived.
Yeah.
That,
mm-hmm.
We didn't know who they were until a year later. They hadn't done the murders when we met them, of course, but a year later they were in the paper because they had apprehended them in Lone Pine, I think,
mm-hmm.
where
yeah.
they had moved
yeah.
to. They were there, and it was all the same people. It was clearly the people we had met. You know, I had a good memory for faces back then,
yeah.
and I knew. I called up James and said, did you see the paper? He said, yeah. Somebody called to tell me, you know, David Kurland or somebody. Somebody said, did you look in the paper? That's all the people that lived up at the ranch. It was just crazy.
Wow.
And there they were, the Manson gang, and we had smoked a joint with them. I hope none of the bad vibes was on the tip of that blunt.
Damn.
That's all I...
Bailiffs have been a favorite butt of jurors' jokes, and there have been many. The most popular has been one they call, Who's Got the Chicken? It was originated by three jurors who brought and hid a rubber replica of a fowl under the pillow of a fourth. Since then, it frequently has cropped up beneath bailiff's pillows. Just the other night, several jurors TP'd a bailiff's quarters with toilet paper.
That's the Manson trial.
How's Charlie doing now?
Hail, Charles, oh, full Charlie. Of mace.
Oh, Charlie.
How's Charlie doing, man?
Oh,
I hear he's still front page.
Not so good.
He?
Still lurching at judges, still waving
Charlie
his
Charlie won't behave. Does he still put his feet up on the bars?
He's doing okay, yes.
He's got that cell so dirty, I understand. He doesn't keep his cell neat.
Oh, they're so shocked at him. The girls refuse to incriminate him and sell out, I
no,
understand. Yes,
really?
They won't. And one of them won't even speak to the judge. She's so angry at him.
No,
and he's
I bet
accused
you he's
her...
hurt.
He is. He's
well, he sent her to college, you
he
know.
He certainly did. He won the war that made her trial possible.
Would you raise your right hand, please? Would you please repeat after me? I do solemnly swear.
I do solemnly swear.
At the testimony I may give.
At the testimony I may give.
In the cause now pending.
In the cause now pending.
Before this court.
Before this court.
Shall be the truth.
Shall be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but
the
truth.
Truth.
So help,
so
me,
help
God.
Me God. And the view of what
be
the Court
seated,
of Appeal
please.
Has
hello,
said.
Hello, God.
It
would
was
you
made
please
quite
state
clear
your name, please?
Charles Manson.
Now,
to be called in this
Your Honor,
sworn.
Then, as the procedure, it puts
sworn.
Me in a very unusual position, Your Honor, in a classically.
Fashion shoots with Beckett, Hanson, Courtney, Love, and